Around with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard, everyone. Hey, I want to start the program out this evening by thanking the hardworking folks at CityNet. You know, they're our provider for the very beginning. Our connectivity comes through them. And without fail, they do a great job. We've been having some problems with the great big, it's not a modem, it's much bigger than a modem, it's a thing. And just came right out today and fixed things up, found some Verizon screw-ups that they're going to handle and I don't have to. Oh, that's the beauty of these guys. So I just want to commend to you the folks at CityNet, if you are in their service or coverage area. You know, we run their ads as a function of the service that they provide to us. And they do a great job. So, kudos to CityNet. Now, here it is, and I actually had to check the clock, and I don't think it's anything to worry about. I don't think it's a sign that I'm slipping at the tender age of 45. But the week is howling past. Last night, I opened the microphone and then, it's 9, and the show was over. You guys got some really, really good rousing conversation going lately, both in the chat room, via email, and on the phones as well. And I want to commend you for that. But the week is indeed rushing by, because here it is Wednesday. But, of course, we know that Wednesday isn't just the middle of the week. It's not just hump day. It's not just downhill to Friday. No, brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting. Choir master, fired up!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, many a moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree.
Sing it!
I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Hallelujah! Ha!
Glory! Come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofer here at the altar of the Cathedral of Common Sense and feel the rays of reason flowing through your very being. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid, and this is your Wednesday night prayer meeting right here on the Horn. Ha! Glory! Yes, indeedy. Of course, we have to take a little bit of time out for our brethren and sistren over at Focus on the Family. Oh, the devil has got them by their finances, brethren and sistren. They have seen $1 million drop-off per month, brothers and sisters. $1 million a month that they're down from this time last year. That's $1 million less dollars they've had to throw people out on their asses. I'm sorry, Jesus doesn't want you anymore. We're laying you off. Yeah, something like 20% of the workforce? Because what? Yeah, I guess Jesus is being mean to Focus on the Family. Of course, then again, that $600,000, that six-tenths of $1 million that James Dobson, that filthy, filthy demon, pumped into Proposition Hate in California might have had a little something to do with it. But don't worry, they're not laying off anybody in the broadcast end. No, Glory, no! Hallelujah! James Dobson will continue pumping his filth into the airwaves day in and day out. Because recessions never hit James Dobson. Just the little minions who put their faith in him. Devils never go hungry. No, 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 brethren and sistren. Yeah, they were down to like $12 million a month from $14 million a month. Ah, your heart just bleeds for them, doesn't it? I know. But that's okay. They'll continue to poison the airwaves. They'll make it. They'll get by, brethren and sistren. They'll get by. It's just that some lower-tier believers working for them, well, they're not going to have such a merry holiday season. You reckon they said Merry Christmas when they handed those people at Focus on the Family their pink slips? Do you reckon? Merry Christmas. Jesus hopes you aren't out on the street this time next month. Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. Clean out your desk, and security will help you carry out anything that you can't. Don't take your time about it. We need you out of here. Yeah. Nice. And the problem for the people that work at Focus on the Family is that if Focus on the Family was actually doing any focusing on any families, there might be a soup kitchen that they sponsor for them to go to. But they don't. No, 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 brethren and sistren. Focus on the Family focuses on homosexual marriage and gay adoption. Not so much with the food kitchen or the bargain clothing stores or all that silly liberal garbage that's contained in the book of Matthew about feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, housing the homeless, visiting the people in prison. Nah, they're not into that. They're into broadcast, baby! Ha! Glory! And they need your millions. Well, I'm funning around, of course. Everything I say, that's large. It's true. $12 million a month? And they got to have layoffs? Margaret.
But it's true.
They can't get by on $12 million a month. Sort of stuns the imagination, doesn't it? But we'll, so that's a starting place for this evening, from here in the pulpit of the Cathedral of Common Sense. There are other places to go. But it is midweek. It is Wednesday. It's prayer meeting. And let's go straight to the congregation.
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
I have a few little things to tell you about the View.
Oh, goody.
Well, one of them today, they were talking about the auto folks wanting to be bailed out.
Yes.
And Whoopi had a really good thing on there. I can't remember it all, but it was really good. She said she was all for that if it was going to help the people that work there. But she said that what was kind of ironic was that the people who were head of the automakers came on their own private jet plane to ask for help from the Congress.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, they came there today. One of those auto executives arrived for the hearing in a $36 million jet, the private jet of one of the automakers.
Well, that's what she was saying. And she said one of them doesn't even live in Detroit. They live, I don't know if she said Denver or what.
Well, yeah, see, where these auto CEOs are concerned, I share her sentiment. I care about the people who work building the automobiles.
Right.
I don't give a tinker's damn about those executives. And frankly, mm-hmm. they arrived on a $36 million private jet. I would like to send them home on a $500,000 public bus.
Yeah, right.
Go Greyhound and leave the driving to us.
Stop at all the little stops.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of the old time that doesn't have the bathroom.
Right. Maybe they can go see some real America. Hey,
yeah.
Juanita, I wonder how those big three fellers voted for president.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, me too.
Go see if John McCain will bail you out, boys.
Yeah.
Maybe Sarah Palin can get on that bus with you and show you some real America.
Yeah. Well, that was the one little thing that Elizabeth had to say today about Sarah Palin was they were talking something about Barack having to bone up on something. I forget. And she said, yeah, and when Sarah Palin does it, they say she's cramming. Well, there's really no comparison, but anyway, that was about all she had to say about that. But, you know, but yesterday was what I wanted to really tell you about, too, was Huckabee was on there.
Yes, he was, wasn't it? He's been making the rounds now that he's got his little Get My Digs In book out. That thing, I'm halfway tempted to see if I can finagle a copy of that from the publisher. Cause that
don't pay for it.
No, I'd never. No, I'm going to make them pay the postage to get it to me.
Well, he really is the most frightening to me because he's able to present himself as, you know, just decent sort of a person, you know, and just good sense of humor and all like that. And what really got me was that Sherry told him that if he had run, she would have voted for him. And Joy said, oh, you're my favorite Republican.
Oh, my.
And
of course, you know that the Godzilla from Wasilla is sitting up there in the frozen north eating her own liver over that. I want to be their favorite Republican. Because, see, this is all designed, Juanita, to put Mike Huckabee in the running for 2012.
Oh,
no, I'm not.
Sure.
I'm not interested. I mean, we're still working on figuring out why it was that one of my sons hung up a dog in a tree and gutted it and then beat it to death and shot it. No, I ain't interested. He's interested.
Well, he said that you know, he's got his own show, and, of course, Elizabeth's already been on it, and he told her that was why it was a hit. You know, such a hit now.
Yeah, right.
But,
I said, yeah, right, yeah, Elizabeth, yeah, the showmaker.
Yeah. And, anyway, he was, they were asking him about the election, and he said, well, he's not president now, and I'm going to be praying for him. I'm going to do this, that, and the other, you know. All that baloney stuff.
Yeah, he's going to pray for him. He isn't going to do anything to help him.
No.
We're praying.
Yeah.
Good on you.
But there's then another thing I heard. This was on Air America. You know, Tom Hartman wasn't on there. I don't know if he was on today or not. But the last couple of days, they had Lee Rayburn. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a young guy from Milwaukee. And I really like him because he really knows what he's talking about. You know, he's really keeps up on everything. And they had a girl on there that was from, I think, the Media Matters, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And she passes out. I had never heard of it, but found the website. She passes out falsies of the year. And you know what? One of them they passed out
was
to Obama. And do you know why?
No.
Because he believes in clean coal.
Ah.
And Rayburn, this young guy, he said, clean coal? Clean coal? There is no such thing as clean coal.
Yeah, fat-free donuts.
But he knows.
Right. Fat-free olive oil. Clean coal.
Yeah, he said that, Lee said that Obama's apparently bought into that, you know, and I know Joe Biden, too. So,
you know, I had a brief conversation, email exchange with Mark Levine, and he said something that I've kind of, it's one of those things that you sort of have to make up in your own mind to make you feel better about things. He said he thinks that that a man as astute as Barack Obama and as intelligent as Joe Biden, that they know there's no such thing as clean coal. They know it's an advertising slogan. And that's really all it is. It's a marketing gimmick. It goes back, literally, talking about clean coal goes back 100 years, Juanita.
Oh.
It really does. And so, but by saying, clean coal, yeah. You know what? I can say I'd be for clean coal. You know what? I would be for clean coal. I am for clean coal. If you can take coal, and you can extract it from the earth without destroying the communities that near where you're extracting it.
Yeah.
If you can, once you've removed it from the ground, make the earth as if you had never been there.
Right.
If you can then process it without putting toxic chemicals into the area surrounding your processing plant.
Right.
If you can then send it to whoever's going to burn it, be it a power company or a steel mill, if you can send it to them and they can burn that coal with zero emissions,
mm-hmm.
if they can make sure that no toxins are released either into the water, the ground, or the atmosphere, why, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But
it ain't never going to happen.
Would they if they could?
Well, right, because you got to remember one of the first things, one of the first campaign promises that George W. Bush broke, Juanita, was he campaigned, he was out on the stump saying, oh, yes, I believe that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. And he had no sooner taken the oath of office than he looked up and said, what am I saying?
Yeah.
It's not a pollutant. How could something that makes your soda pop all fizzy be a pollutant?
I don't know.
And so, you know, your question is very well put. If they could, would they? No, they wouldn't. But, you know, that doesn't stop them from spending millions on it. And that's kind of what makes, not to toot my own trumpet too much, but that's kind of what makes this a little bit important. Bless his heart, Tom Hartman the other day said some things that made it sound like he was kind of getting squishy about coal.
Uh-huh.
Coal is unacceptable. Because that vision of clean coal that I just put forward, Juanita, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, and it's going to ruin a lot of water, too.
Yes.
I mean, besides the drinking water, it's going to ruin the water it would take to so-called clean it up.
Sure. Liquid coal.
Like osmosis, isn't it?
Liquid coal takes, what, anywhere between 3 and 8 gallons per gallon of liquid coal fuel to produce. Meanwhile.
And that's as bad. Almost, it's not. Maybe not quite as bad as the nuclear waste.
What are you going to do with it? It shares a lot of the same vile characteristics as nuclear waste. And meanwhile, there was a UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change meeting yesterday, Juanita. And here's what they said, that by the year 2080, half the world's population
will face a shortage of clean water because of climate change. Now, that's just because of climate change. Look what happened. You know, the Appalachian system, whether it's the headwaters of the Tennessee River or the headwaters of the Allegheny or the headwaters of the Monongahela or the headwaters of the Susquehanna, all of those things, all of the headwaters of everything that's good and decent in terms of water-wise east of the Mississippi just about rises in the Appalachian Mountains. If we poison the Appalachian Mountains, we're literally poisoning the water for everybody downstream. That's why at Coal River Mountain Watch, they say we're all downwind and we're all downstream.
Yeah. Well, you know, after a while, everything affects the whole world. After a while.
Sure it does. A drop of water runs the whole world round.
And, it really was brought home to me when I saw, before I ever knew about Horn Radio, I was watching Free Speech TV with Amy Goodman.
Right.
She's the main one. And they had a document on there, and I don't know when it was, but I think it was from maybe the 60s or 70s, about how they had messed up this town, you know, the coal industry. And they showed some of the rivers there. They weren't just polluted. They were worse than that. I mean, they were like muddy. I mean, like muddy oil or something. I don't know. It was just horrible. And the way those people had to live. And it brought that home to me, and then when you started talking about it, and I thought, my gosh, you know, but you know, when I was a kid, the industry we used to have down here was they had the citrus plants, and they had a tomato plant here, and I was just a kid, it just impressed me that they put their garbage or whatever they had in lakes. We've got a lot of lakes here. And I thought, why in the world would they do that? You know, and I was just a kid.
Right.
And I thought that.
Well, that's because this is stuff that you can only rationalize inside a twisted adult mind, Juanita. A child looks at filth going into a river and says, well, that can't be good. A child sees
citrus and tomato stuff, you know.
Right, sure.
It wasn't like coal, but it can be polluting too.
Of course it can. It rotting stuff grows pathogens.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know how many years ago, but they tried to put a big sewer system out here, and it was going to cost all of us like thousands of dollars, like. I don't know how many, they sent a survey. I live in a little suburb. And they sent a survey to us about would we be willing to pay, I forget how many thousand just to have this thing built. And then they wanted so many thousand to have a place where you could hook up to it. And then of course they would have so much, you would have to pay the service on it. And it would destroy part of the neighbors, the homes and all. You know, they would have to,
Yeah, the beauties of eminent domain, sure.
They said, we've got mostly septic tanks out here. And if you put them in correctly, they work fine, I believe. But see what they try to blame us, saying that we had polluted the whole chain of lakes, which is something like maybe around... between 7 and 10 lakes, you know, connected by canals, that it was our septic tanks was polluting them. Come to find out, there have been police people, you know, septic tank cleaners were also dumping in the lakes. But they blamed it our little community. And we couldn't afford, you know, that. It was like somebody lived down here in the winter, somebody from up north, one of them Yankees, you know.
I know.
And they said they just weren't going to stay here if we didn't have a septic system. And the ones we have down here, they stink.
Yeah.
You know, the sewage system, I mean.
Yeah, the sewage, yeah.
They stink.
Yes.
They stink.
Yes, they do. That's like the hog farms and stuff. There's some of those in northwest Alabama. And I mean, and you know, Lord knows, Tar Heel, North Carolina, where they slaughter 32,000 hogs a day. I mean, I can't even get my head around numbers like that.
Yeah. That's
you
sad.
Smell it long before you get to
it. Oh, that is so sad, isn't it, the way they do.
And the way they treat the workers there. I mean, I won't, I won't allow anything with the Smithfield brand into my home.
Well, now, is that the one that advertises that cook, that woman?
Yes.
You know, she was on...
You talking about Paula Deen?
Yeah. She was on Larry King, and he was asking her about the union trying to organize, and she said, oh, well, the voters didn't want it.
Like she knew anything about it. But, they, you know, that's why Smithfield went out and got Paula Deen, because she's all cozy and homey. And, well, you know, there's a great, there is a great big pond full of pig poo. But you know what? If you just turn your back on that pig poo and get and make yourself some croutons, you can have a lovely, oh, God.
Did she say that?
No, but, I mean, you know how it is.
She could have.
And, you know, this is somebody who was on really, really hard times and found a way to make a success of herself in order to give her sons some shot at life.
Yeah.
And yet, she, you know, she's one of the, it's kind of like being one of those people who, well, like Clarence Thomas, you know, climb the affirmative action ladder and then stomp the hands of everybody climbing up behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Well, you know, those little people, they didn't want it.
It was kind of, she was really sheepish about it. She said, well, they decided that they didn't want it.
Yeah, and she has no idea what was done to make it that way. It's kind of like the Fiends of Coal. You know, we've got a couple of retired football coaches up here, Don Nealon and Bob Pruitt. And, you know, they were okay football coaches, but not so much with the rest of being a human being.
Yeah.
But the Fiends of Coal ran right out and hired them. Well, dang, if Don Nealon wants him some clean coal, I want to be a friend of coal with Don Nealon. Hee-wee!
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting that somebody like that, he's that announcer that's from, he's a young guy from Milwaukee, I believe. He's somewhere in Wisconsin. I believe it's Milwaukee. And he's a frequent guest, guest host. I don't know why they don't have him on full time. But anyway, he's real young and he's really, really knows about things, you know, he's really well read.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I thought, wow, that's great that he knows that.
Well, that is
and
really
that he
good.
Said that, you know, is the way he said it. And I thought, that's great.
You know, you mentioned television, and you know how much television I don't watch. I think Agnes and I have a new addiction. This is a totally different subject one here. But we have a new addiction. We sat down, and just by happenstance, the grandbabies and daughter and son-in-law were off over at his people's. And so we actually had all the other three were gone to bed, and it was quiet. And Agnes and I were sitting there on the couch in the living room just sort of looking at each other like something's wrong because it was all quiet and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just clicked around a little bit and – you know, the demon box is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
But I was just, it had come around 10 p.m. Eastern time, and I thought, well, you know, what the heck. And so I was just scanning, and I stopped on this program, and we sat, and it was a cop show.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched a little bit of it, and lo and behold, we're hooked. It is, it's called Life on Mars.
Oh, that's my son loves that, yeah.
So we went back, and yes, I watched the preview, everything but the first two episodes. They're not available online.
You know, it came from, originally, the original one was from England.
Yeah, it was on the BBC.
Yeah, he used to watch that, and he said he was hoping this one would be as good, you know, but he thinks some of it is better.
And I was pretty, it's, you know what it is? It's like a cross between Twin Peaks, NYPD Blue, and, it's something out of Kurt Vonnegut with Billy Pilgrim coming unstuck in time.
Yeah.
But it's proven a lot of fun to watch because you got a guy from a cop from 2008 stuck in 1973, and they do a pretty passing fair job of trying to recreate 1973, and everybody's dressed in those god awful old Barney Miller clothes and things like that. There's basically an Archie Bunker character in there,
And Harvey Keitel, that was the thing that blew me away. I mean, Harvey Keitel is a pro. And he, you know, he plays the Barney Miller character, I guess, for one of them.
I love Barney Miller.
I do too. You know, I keep waiting for a cameo from one of the Barney Miller people, but I haven't seen it yet.
Well, they have on Conan O'Brien's show, one that played Fish. He's a drop-in. He's on there like periodically. They have regulars that are on there periodically, and he does a lot of skits or just appears, you know, and he's really good.
Mm-hmm. So
Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda, yeah. Oh, I love Abe Vigoda. Of course, I loved that whole cast. You know, Jack Sue passed away, but he was a brilliant deadpan comedian.
Oh, he was so good, yeah. They were all great.
And Harris was played by Ron. Oh, I can't remember. Ron something. And of course, Steve Guttenberg. Was it Steve Guttenberg?
I can't.
No, not Steve Guttenberg. Mm-hmm. The guy who played, I need to have IMDb.
He's a little bit like Steve Guttenberg, but is that who you're talking about?
I'm thinking, the guy who played, Dietrich. And somebody will tell me in the chat room who it was in a minute, so. We had a heck of a good time watching it, so.
Good. Well, I'll tell my son about that.
Yeah.
I'll probably start watching it too.
I feel more culturally relevant when I've got at least a television show I can talk about. until Tony Bourdain comes back with the new season
of
Reservations.
Years ago, I used to watch the soap operas, and you could meet people from all over the country, probably now all over the world, and you could get into a discussion about the soap operas, and you just talk. You know, they did this and they did that, and you know they know what you're talking about.
Well, and that's the thing with the show on ABC. There's all these little 70s details, and there's these cool soundtracks, and I guess it's called Life on Mars because that was the Bowie song that he was listening to when the character was run over by a car. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
that's nice. That's nice. One you both enjoy.
Yeah, and the big question is, do we get to watch it again tomorrow night?
Oh, I see.
There it is. Thank you, Lottie. Steve Landisberg. There we go. Yeah, he played Dietrich. And his dry deadpan humor was just gorgeous. So
Well, my son got me to watching Boston Legal, and it's going off. This is its last year. And it is so great because it's just got a bunch of everything in it, you know. And William Shatner's got a great role on there. He plays somebody with Alzheimer's.
Oh, is the Shatner character got Alzheimer's now?
Yeah. But he calls it, he heard him talking about mad cow disease, and he said that's what he had. He calls it his mad cow disease. You just have to see it to know what I'm saying. But
I've seen clips here and there, and yeah, it's got some moments of quality to it.
But it's such drawn out. But you know who writes it is Michelle Pfeiffer's husband.
Oh, really?
And he's brilliant. I don't know if he's the one that writes that show or not, Life on Mars. He's writing another one. He may be the one that's writing it. I forget his name.
Well, so far so good. I'm actually kind of enjoying it. And I'm getting an email, by the way, letting me know that our buddy David in Tennessee says that Mike Huxterby is in heavy rotation on Trinity Broadcasting Network, and he says heavy. Talk show visits with every preacher there, and they're out there pimping his book along and reminding everybody of the danger of the unusual them and that president.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, they've said for a long time, if we don't like this country, we should leave. I think they should leave and get their own little dictatorship, you know, where everybody's just alike.
Yeah, well, but see, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay to be that way if you're a Republican. You can still tell us that we have to leave.
Oh, yeah. And you can say things and we can't. We don't dare say something back to you. suppose.
Right.
You know, I told you about my friend, and I'm just kind of glad it happened. It might be for a good reason that it happened the way it did, you know, because she's one that says stuff to me, but when I say something back, it's like, God, the sky is falling. But, you know, that's not any way to be a good friend. You should have some give and take. But anyway, I just have to learn to live with it and just happen, you know.
Well, in fact, man, you know, they're kind of coming unglued, and that's pretty fun to watch.
News, you know. And I'll tell you, anybody that's listening, if they want to find out about what right-wing Christianity is about, is watch those shows. Just watch those talk shows on, like with Jan and Paul, and you know, and
yeah.
Watch them. Make yourself watch it. You'll learn a lot about what's going on, and you'll understand. And you know, the new Republican thing is that this country is center right.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Majority, and I've heard it from two different people already.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the new talking point. And when my friend says anything to me, I hear these talking points. That's what really gets me. The talking points. You've heard them and heard them. I mean, think for yourself. But anybody, like I said, watch those shows and you'll learn why. About a lot of things, where these people get their information from, not just from Doolally, you know, down here in Florida with his big old house and cat. You know, Rush.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. 26,000 square feet and a cat, right, yeah.
And it's really harder to fight what the church says to those people.
Sure it is.
I've been in it. And you believe, you know, those people you believe until you find out differently. And I read a really great thing where somebody wrote in and said they would be happy when the religion of Christianity quit hating half of its members.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great statement.
Well, it is. And, in fact, let's see, it was trying to remember who sent this along. Oh, it was our pal Maura sent along this column from Kathleen Parker called "Giving Up on God," and I'm going to try to go into that in a little bit.
Okay.
The Republicans are some Republicans, and bear in mind, I'm not going to get all squishy over them, any of them, because they're all repig-lickings to me.
Regret it.
Yeah. You know, extend the olive branch, withdraw bloody stump. That's how it works.
Yep.
But they are beginning to engage in a little navel gazing that I find rather at least it's at least an interesting diversion.
Yeah. I saw one on C-SPAN today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forget who it was, but he was talking normally. And some of the people that called in, you know, oh, that's a good idea, you know. So maybe that's their new, one of their new things. They should have tried a long time ago. They'd have really had everybody.
Well, the funny thing, though, is maybe they're engaging in this navel gazing because they see that, you know, when you see Focus on the Family laying off, you know, oodles of people, then
did they really lay off people?
Oh, yeah, they're laying off a boatload of folks.
Well,
because they're down $1 million a month from last year.
Well, maybe they'll go down another couple of million.
Wouldn't break my heart.
How many million did they get?
They're down. I think they're down a million to from like 14 something to 12 something, or 13 something to from 15 something. Yeah, they're really hitting hard times.
Well, you know, he reminds me of. Who was the guy that was head of Watergate? Not Watergate, but Clinton's impeachment, Kenneth Starr.
Yeah.
He and Kenneth Starr and Rose, that's at least three, they look like brothers to me.
And they certainly are in spirit, Juanita.
Yep.
Sons of Satan.
Yep.
Yep. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening, and we will talk
you
soon.
Too.
All right.
It's over It's over $8.5 million. It's like $8,600,000 and something now.
I hope it just keeps climbing.
It is.
It really would be. I don't know how we're going to do it, but it would be nice if we could get Jim Martin in Georgia, and just that would be so symbolically valuable.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
They've even got Bill Clinton down there for him. I hope that doesn't mess him up.
I do, too. And
since Bill Clinton had his heart surgery, I just wonder if that hasn't affected him. He doesn't seem... Not that he didn't make mistakes before. I don't mean that, but...
Well, I think it's just not as fun for him not being president.
Yeah.
That's pretty serious. Unless you're somebody with a real depth of character like Jimmy Carter, being an ex-president is probably not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because for 8 years you have that power, and then, boom, you don't. And nobody listens anymore, and nobody feels beholden to you, or nobody feels like they really, you're a drone at that point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Al Gore's down there, too.
Well, I hope Al Gore can have some positive impact. I hope Bill Clinton can have some positive impact.
I do, too. I do, too.
And, of course, so is John McCain's down there, has been down there working his butt off for Saxby Chambliss. I hope we pull out all the stops. Let's put it that way.
I do, too.
And we shall see, because that election comes up fairly soon. Juanita, awfully good talking to you, and have a wonderful evening.
Yeah. Oh, you knew Alaska went for...
Yeah, oh, yes. That's exciting. I mean, the guy's not going to be any sort of raving liberal.
He'll be a Democrat.
But he'll be a Democrat, and he'll caucus on our side, and hopefully we'll get some of the right votes out of him.
I sure hope so.
I do, too. Take care, Juanita.
Okay, you too.
Bye now.
Good night.
Yeah, I think Mark Levine was right as far as the Begich guy is concerned. He's still going to holler for drilling on the North, drilling on the Anwar and silliness like that. But we can hopefully neutralize any of that and bring him over on the right votes. I did want to share this with you. It's a column from Kathleen Parker. You know, she's the one who came out and earned the ire of the weirdo right wing. But she isn't, you know, she's a real live, honest to God, not, this is not something from The Onion. She's a real live conservative, repig-licking. But she's from that wing of the repig-licking party that you can at least try to do business with. You can't do business with the weirdo right wing. You know, the people that have meaningful debates about whether they're going to rapture naked or rapture in their clothing. And her column from today, as provided by Maura, is quite stunning, really. Maura said this was run in today's Washington Post on the opinion page. Finally, a conservative columnist calls out the religious right. And oddly enough, somebody else did, too, and that is that God, he's why can I not remember his name? Jesus, he's maybe 6 months younger than Paul Harvey, and he's been doing right wing commentary for years, and I can't remember his name right now. He shows up on Fox and things like that, but he wrote something similar about a week ago. But Kathleen Parker coming out and saying it carries some pundit gravitas. Jesus, that sounds like a meal that you order in an Indian restaurant, doesn't it? I'll have the pundit gravitas and the tandoori chicken, please. And a mango lassi while you're at it. As Republicans sort out the reasons for their defeat, they likely will overlook or dismiss the gorilla in the pulpit. Three little letters, great big problem, G-O-D. I'm bathing in holy water as I type, she says. To be more specific, the evangelical right-wing oogity-boogity branch of the GOP is what ails the erstwhile conservative party and will continue to afflict and marginalize its constituents if reckoning doesn't soon cometh. Oh, somebody's tongue is way back in her cheek, soon cometh. Simply put, armband religion is killing the Republican Party, and the truth, as long as we're setting ourselves free, is that if one were to eavesdrop on private conversations among the party intelligentsia, one would hear precisely that. The choir has become absurdly off-key, and many Republicans know it. But they need those votes. So it has been for the grand old party since the 1980s, or so as it has become increasingly beholden to an element that used to be relegated to wooden crates on street corners. Ooh, I don't think I'm even that catty. Short break as Ryder ties blindfold and smokes her last cigarette. Which is to say, the GOP has surrendered its high ground to its lowest brows. Ooh! Ouch! In the process, the party has alienated its non-base constituents, including other people of faith, those who prefer a more private approach to worship, as well as secularists and conservative-leaning Democrats who otherwise might be tempted to cross the aisle. Here's the deal, pubbies. Howard Dean was right. You can almost see the flames erupting off of the smoke off the keyboard, flames on the screen as she types this stuff. It isn't that culture doesn't matter. It does. But preaching to the choir produces no converts. And shifting demographics suggest that the Republican Party and conservatism with it eventually will die out unless religion is returned to the privacy of one's heart where it belongs. The Southern Baptists, they're going to read this and get all up in their imprecatory prayer and so on. Jesus, let the lightning strike her! From a Republican standpoint, however, she's right. And frankly, from a Democratic standpoint, the fact that we started playing footsie with the evangelical freaks is a little bit disturbing to me. Religious conservatives become defensive at any suggestion that they've had something to do with the GOP's erosion. And though the recent Democratic sweep can be attributed in large part to a referendum on Bush and the failing economy, three long-term trends identified by Emory University's Alan Abramowitz have been devastating to the Republican Party: increasing racial diversity, declining marriage rates, and changes in religious beliefs. Suffice it to say, the Republican Party is largely comprised of white, married, now she says Christians, but we all know better, right? White, married Christians. Anyone watching the two conventions last summer can't have missed the stark differences. One party was brimming with energy, youth, and diversity. The other felt like an annual Depends sales meeting. Holy cow! Oh, this woman's going to get a blistering. That's okay. Apparently she's decided to lay it all out because the next line is, with the exception of Miss Alaska, of course. Even Sarah Palin has blamed Bush policies for the GOP loss. She's not entirely wrong, but she's also part of the problem. Her recent conjecture about whether to run for president in 2012, does anyone really doubt she will, speaks for itself. I'm like, okay, God, if there is an up and down... Wait, no, that's wrong. I'm like, okay, God, if there is an open door for me somewhere, that is what I always pray. I'm like, don't let me miss that open door. Show me where the open door is. And if there is an open door in 12 or 4 years later, if it's something that's going to be good for my family, for my state, for my nation, an opportunity for me, then I'll plow through that door.
And then this from Kathleen Parker. Claws out, saucer of milk by her side. Let's do pray that God shows Alaska's governor the door. Meanwhile, it isn't necessary to evict the Creator from the public square, surrender Judeo-Christian values, or diminish the value of faith in America. Belief in something greater than oneself has much to recommend it, including most of the world's architectural treasures, our universities, and even our founding documents.
Getting kind of close to the line there, Kathleen, but okay, you're a Republican. This is the best I can hope for from you. But like it or not, we are a diverse nation,
Oh, they don't like it, Kathleen. They don't like it one bit. That's why your conventions look like that aforementioned Depends convention. Yeah.
But like it or not, we are a diverse nation. No longer predominantly white and Christian. The change Barack Obama promised has already occurred, which is why he won. Among Jewish voters, 78% went for Obama. 66% of under 30 voters did likewise. 45% of voters ages 18 to 29 are Democrats, compared with just 26% Republican. Let's see, 45, 55, 65, 71. 29% are, I guess, unaffiliated, independent. In 2000, party affiliation was split almost evenly. Wow. The young will get older, of course. Most eventually will marry, and some will become their parents. But non-whites won't get whiter. And the non-religious won't get religion through external conversion. It doesn't work that way. Given those facts, the future of the GOP looks dim and dimmer if it stays the present course. Either the Republican Party needs a new base, or the nation may need a new party. Well, duh. For a Republican, that's actually fairly well written. It doesn't have the venom dripping from it of, say, some semi-literate screed by Michelle Malkin. It doesn't have the poison-to-touch qualities to it of anything that comes out of Mann Coulter's mouth. Or through her pointy, sort of, Wicked Witch of the West fingers. No. But those are the that's the truth, and it lights the way to a greater truth. Either the Republican Party needs a new base, or the nation may need a new party. And that is a sort of confirmation of what I've said all along. Those people who want a three-party system, or a four-party system, or an eight-party system, in other words, in essence, a parliamentary system, are not going to get it. I'm sorry. You got two choices, vanilla and strawberry, chocolate and peach, mint chocolate chip and whatever, but it's all ice cream, so to speak. Or maybe in light of the Lieberman business yesterday, dog poop or cat poop, it's all still poop. That's kind of nasty, but no, I really can't take that back now, can I? But what you'll get, and see, this kind of navel-gazing by the Republican Party is going to make it even worse for them, because their last base, their last bastion, is in the Deep South. The last dying scream, howl, of the Republican Party is in places like Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Tennessee, with distant, weird outposts like Idaho and Utah. And you know what? By the time folks are done with Utah, it may start to die there, too, as that poor benighted place gets dragged kicking and screaming into the 20th century. No, no, normal Utahns aren't going to take too kindly the ones who didn't participate in meddling in California's political affairs. Ordinary, everyday Utahns, of which we have a number of listeners, can't be feeling too very good about the fact that there are people out there crying for a wholesale boycott of the state of Utah. If it comes from Utah, if it happens in Utah, it don't happen for a whole lot of people now, because of what a whole bunch of Utahns and Mormons and the Mormon Church itself did in injecting itself into a constitutional discussion in an entirely different state. So whether it's Utah or Alabama or Mississippi or Oklahoma, they'll probably sit there and cling to their tired, worn-out, religiously insane, pasty-faced, doughy political ideology for another 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years. But eventually, they'll fall too. And the question is, what will replace the Republican Party? And I frankly don't have the answer. Now, there has been a steady move afoot to ditch the Democratic Party, and we have hemorrhaged members to things like the Green and third-party efforts. But we're not dead yet. We're not even coughing up blood on the porch. The Republican Party, however, is terminal. And that's a good thing. It's a lovely thing. The religiously insane people can go back to staying home on Election Day. For 8 long years, they screamed about the rights of the fetus. And no effort was made by the Republicans who dragged them by the nose election after election after election to get them to the polls, to do all of their bidding, whether it's hating someone for wanting to get married or hating someone for wanting to be left alone or hating someone for wanting to join a union or hating someone for not wanting to engage in stupid, moronic, bloodthirsty, bank-breaking wars. The religious right has always been there. But it comes with a price. And the religious right may, by God, be figuring out now. Cal Thomas, by the way, was that columnist. Oh, don't you hate the stream of consciousness is hell. Cal Thomas wrote something similar to this a week or so ago. And coming from a fundamentalist, religiously insane person, it actually carries a little bit more weight, perhaps with the religiously insane, than Kathleen Parker does. But the so-called values voters have seen what the Republican Party gets them. The Republican Party didn't even get them their yes vote on Proposition Hate. They did that themselves.
Arnold Schwarzenegger
stayed as way from far away from Proposition Hate as he could get, within reason. Charlie Crist, the governor of Florida, a Republican, wanted nothing to do with that piece of referendum garbage. Yeah. It may be time for the religious wrong to pack it in and understand that they can't control government. Oh, there's an entire industry out there, make no mistake. The James Dobsons and the American Family Association, they're always going to have a certain amount of money flowing into their coffers because they're the religious version of the Klan. And there's always going to be, I hate to say it, that element in this society that is willing to put forward their time, their efforts, and most importantly for those thugs, their money, to make it happen. The Republican Party is mercifully dying, and we can help it a lot if we push them along a little bit. In reference to Kathleen Parker's words, David in Tennessee adds, Ronnie Reagan won by a smaller popular vote in 1980 than what Barack Obama did, and they called that a mandate, and we bought that crap. But the wingnuts say that Obama's election's not a mandate. Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, we've got to get him to do the right thing, or do our best to get him to do the right thing. I think that's our only... That's only the non-hypocritical thing to do. But still, it's kind of fun, especially on a prayer meeting Wednesday. It's kind of fun to watch the Republicans who were so flush with their victory and their ascendancy and all of their talk of a permanent Republican majority and their thuggish tactics on K Street. You couldn't get a job on K Street in Washington, D.C. if you were a registered Democrat for the last 8 years. I mean, it's changing now. K Street's still a problem, even if it's got Democrats in it, though, you see. But it is fun to watch them realizing that these are self-inflicted wounds and they can't stop the hemorrhaging. It's pleasant indeed. A little request. Sasquatch of DU came into the chat room, asked for this, and it ties in nicely with a couple of things along the way. So we'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be back.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late and asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we travel right down the Green River, the abandoned old prison down by Avery Hill, where the air smelled like snakes, we'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all we would kill. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Then the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured the timber and stripped all the land. Well, they dug for their coal till the land was forsaken, then they rolled it all down as the progress of man. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. When I die, let my ashes float down the Green River. Let my soul roll on up to the Rochester Dam. I'll be halfway to heaven with paradise waiting, just 5 miles away from wherever I am. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's let prayer meeting roll on, then. Of course, unlike the religion industry, comments from the congregation are always welcome. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333, and everything rings into the same place. The phones are behaving flawlessly since the visit from CityNet's tech crew this morning. Great work, guys. And let's see where to wander. But yeah, you know, I gotta. Okay, this isn't exactly prayer meeting stuff, but I can't help asking the question. You know, we're forever being told that today on Wall Street, a major banking CEO's shoelace broke and the Dow plummeted 300 points. As if the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the traders who helped create it are some sort of, I don't know, skittish racing greyhounds, and the last one you see go pee usually wins the race. Oil futures rose today on speculators' fears that there may be sand in Saudi Arabia. You know how it goes. So today, at the closing bell, the Dow Jones Industrial Average found a landing spot below the 8,000 mark for the first time since 2003, 5 years, or four and change. Standard & Poor's 500 dumped 6%. Dow Jones dumped 400, 5% lower. All 30 of the members of the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost ground. It was bad all day long on the market, and toward the end, everybody just said screw it and sold. Now, bear in mind, the only people who are losing money are the people who are in the market. The traders and the brokers and so forth, they got all kinds of gimmicks to help them stay afloat. They lose when they win, and they win when they lose, and they win when they win. That's what I meant. So I have to ask the question: You think this little exchange had anything to do with the Dow and the S&P 500
taking a big old powder today. This is Representative Gary Ackerman, a Democrat from New York, having an exchange with the CEOs of the so-called Big Three today in the House. And you just got to wonder what impact this had on Wall Street.
There's a delicious irony in seeing private luxury jets flying in to Washington, D.C., and people coming off of them with tin cups in their hand, saying that they're going to be trimming down and streamlining their businesses. It's almost like seeing a guy show up at the soup kitchen in high hat and tuxedo.
Yeah, it really is, Congressman Ackerman. It's reminiscent of that old wonderful the Daffy Duck cartoon where he's a detective and he's got the trench coat on, the whole Bogart look, the tall peaked fedora. I had just finished an old case, he says, as he walks over to the window and throws a case of empty beer bottles out. I needed a new case. Yeah, that's right. That's right. The CEO of General Motors flew a $36 million luxury aircraft from somewhere near Detroit, I assume, to Washington, D.C. at the cost of roughly $20,000 round trip. Yeah. By comparison, you could get a cramped little seat on Northwest Airlines Flight 2364.
Northwest Airlines Flight 2364, now departing Detroit for Washington, D.C. Northwest Airlines Flight 2364, now departing.
Flight 2364, Detroit to Washington, were $288 for coach. And if you wanted first class, it's $837. Although that's just a wee little jump jet, I think. And I don't know what first, there are some planes where first class is literally a curtain. Just so you don't have to sit back there with the hoi polloi. I don't know if you even get the steam towels and so forth and the champagne. Better peanuts? It's hard to improve on a peanut. $20,000. And that's just one CEO, friends and neighbors. Just one. The others didn't get there in Greyhounds. And you have to wonder if Wall Street... You know, Wall Street watches this stuff. You got to wonder if Wall Street... The guys were sitting there watching it. Then the market was kind of not really doing much of anything, down if anything, but not completely going in the tank. And then that question, that comment comes forward. Couldn't you all have downgraded to first class or jet pooled to get here? It would have at least sent the message that you do get it. And Wall Street, oh, hell no, they really didn't, they did. If you need something from someone, do you adopt the strategy of going to them and acting like you don't need it? Well, if you want to give me $25 billion, I guess I'll take it. I mean, Or if you're really serious about something, do you try to make it abundantly apparent that this is important? Now, see, yesterday, the Democratic majority in the United States Senate spit on me and you and everybody who walked and knocked on doors and gave money and did everything when they let Joe Lieberman back in with no consequences. And I'm sorry, the chairmanship of the subcommittee on plumbing, environment and something or another, is not a punishment.
And today, the CEOs of the big three spat in your face again. Only this time they, and, you know, went for the really good sinus oyster.
What, you want me to fly first class in a common jet?
What was the guy's name? Bird Dog Wilson, maybe? They hung Bird Dog on him as a nickname back in, I guess, the late 40s, early 50s, when he publicly stated, as the CEO of General Motors, that the common working man was no better than a bird dog. Like I said the other night, it's why my father refused to ever buy a General Motors product. Because my father was kind of proud of being that common working man. And looking back, I realized that he had an uncommon sense of dignity. But that's what we got again today. The rubes are going to give us the $25 billion, and we're going to scare them to death if they don't. And we will punish them like they have not been punished in three generations if they don't. The hell with you, Congressman Ackerman. I'll fly down here in the private $36 million jet anytime I want to, and you people are gonna write the check. You suppose they went back into the ante room or whatever, and one CEO looked at another CEO, and they just both looked at each other and said, what? We've got jets, we're not gonna fly them? Oh, I'm sure that this is being portrayed on right-wing hate radio as class warfare. And it is class warfare. The only thing is the opening salvos and the continuing machine gun bursts are being fired not by us, but by them. Richard Wagner, Robert Nardelli, and Alan Mulally, GM, Chrysler, and Ford. And then for Wagner to have the nerve to sit there and say, we're all slashing back. We're going to be dramatically leaner. Well, what you got to understand is that what Wagner means by dramatically leaner is he's going to take it out of working people's ass. If we don't keep a mighty tight rein and jam the bit way back in their mouths. Brad Sherman, a Democrat from California, also followed up by saying, well, gentlemen, do you have any plans to sell the private jets? No hands went up. And then he spoke truth, Brad Sherman, Democrat, California. You'll remember Brad Sherman as being the guy who stood up during the last bailout discussion and said, you know, I was promised martial law if I didn't vote for this thing. And he said today, I don't know how I go back to my constituents and say the auto industry has changed if they own private jets, which aren't only just expensive to own, but expensive to operate and expensive to fly here rather than to have flown commercial. I don't either. But I know that this being capitalist, corporatist America, it will not come out of Richard Wagner's ass if GM goes bankrupt. Oh, sure, on all the filings and all the forms and all the little sheets of paper, they'll list things like health care for retirees under a heading called liabilities. Fully functioning human beings with human worth and human value, human hearts, human ambitions, human goals, human desires, and human dreams, and human hopes will be reduced in that bankruptcy filing
to a pejorative. Liabilities. Wagoner will not be a liability. Neither will his vice president for widget wrapping. Or his vice president for men's room, executive men's room toiletries. Nope. You know, I got to thinking the other day, because you know I love movies. I need to sit down and watch Mr. Mom again. Because there's a beautiful scene. You know, Mr. Mom, it takes as its genesis the layoff of the design guy who had a cushy job and his lovely wife, played by Terry Garr, has to go back into the workplace. Schooner Tuna, the tuna with a heart. The brain cells. How does this stuff wind up on my brain cells? Because it means something to me. These are American fables. Our movies are our mythology. And there is a scene toward the end of the film where the Michael Keaton character punches the smarmy executive right in the jaw. And it is a gratifying scene. I remember watching it in college on the VCR. Remember VCRs? And everybody hooting and hollering, yay! You know, when the bad guy finally got his. Not much different than things that happened 2,500 years ago in the theaters of ancient Greece. And that's what we're sort of looking at now, isn't it? That's what we're hoping for. Hoping against hope that working people won't be the ones who take it on the chin. That finally there will be some justice. Meanwhile, the Bush administration, oh, you can't bail them out. Oh, no, they got to. Why? Because there's no great damn big unions on Wall Street. All the bailout money went right where the Bush administration wanted the bailout money to go, sunshine. This, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to finally stick it to the United Auto Workers like they've wanted to stick it to them for nearly 100 years. This is a Republican opportunity to put paid on promises made by sons to fathers, made by fathers to grandfathers and grandfathers to great-grandfathers, that someday, son, someday we'll make those union bastards pay. And this is that. And that's why the Bush administration doesn't want a damn thing to do with taking $25 billion out of the $700 billion that's really $3 trillion that's been given away, $2 trillion of it to people that Bernanke and Paulson won't tell us who it was. That's why they don't want to do it. Because once and for all, this is the chance for the ultimate repig-licking union bust. And they're licking their chops. They're salivating. The Repiglicans are damn near walking around with bibs on to catch the drool from the very thought of being able to finally destroy what thousands upon thousands of American men and women built. What thousands and thousands of many of them women put forth our war effort on. Between 1940 and 1945. This is their chance. This is their moment. This is the wettest wet dream that they have ever had. And America's nice and pissed off at Detroit, too, because of thuggish corporatists like Wagoner and Nardelli And that makes us a little less willing to remember. To remember that the car companies aren't Nardelli, and they're not Wagoner, and they're not a $36 million jet. They're moms and dads who are scared for their very lives this evening. Mothers and fathers who look at their children, and they don't just wonder about will we be able to get Christmas for them this year. They wonder if they'll be able to put a roof over their heads next year. They don't have those subprime mortgages that the right wing, well, see, them people never should have had. These are people with awesome credit because they had good American jobs. And they don't know if they'll have it for much longer. I'm sick at the idea of bailing out Detroit. And frankly, if we're going to do it, and we do it in such a way that doesn't absolutely send Nardelli and Wagoner, what's the other creep's name? Mualli, packing, then we haven't done anything at all. If we don't enforce standards that have been talked about as being the absolute must sine qua non of the American auto industry that would have saved us 30 years ago. If we don't finally get serious about that, then they will fail. And the $25 billion will just puff of smoke like the money that we pumped into the airlines after September the 11th, 2001. Remember that? We pumped bajillions of dollars into the airline. Well, they're failing because of September 11th. Hell no, they were failing because of Reagan-esque deregulation. Damn. Well, we pumped gazillions into them. And what did they do? They got the money and started laying people off. That's how it works in Bushmerica, and sunshine, Bushmerica is still the order of the day for 61 days, 16 hours, and 32 more minutes. I got other stories in the stack of the opportunity that these people have to keep stealing the silver, to literally pull the wiring out of the walls. And they're doing it, and they want it. Do I want to bail out of the auto industry under normal circumstances? Hell no. I'd far rather see some program that put a new car in every driveway at taxpayers' expense to be paid back by Detroit. And maybe in the 5 years that we hope the new car would last, Detroit rolls out an entire new fleet of sane, economic, environmentally viable vehicles that we can then trade in on. This is doable. This isn't complicated. Makes a hell of a lot of sense. Zero interest financing. Go to the car lot, come home with an automobile at a fair price. How's that for propping up Wall Street? Oh, wait, that means they don't just get $25 billion to go and play euchre with. Yeah, silly me. I think about working people. I'm just nuts, I guess. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed, what's up?
Same old crock. They just, Stevens, I don't know if you knew it or not, I just called in about 20 minutes ago, but they've announced that Stephen has given up his hopes of becoming.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's beat.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you about some different stuff.
Sure.
And I'm like you, I don't agree with this car bailout crap. They haven't explained in any way when they ask them, how much it would take. You know, a man that don't know how much it takes to run his household a month is a damn idiot, to put it plain, and I hate I'm using the wrong language again.
No, you haven't even gotten to the fun ones yet. You use what you want.
But I just can't believe that the people are thinking about supporting this. Let me tell you something. And what I think on it, or what I put together from what I can understand, is somebody will pick up the car industry somewhere, and they will make these plants go. Now, whether it's this bunch, I watched them today huddle around that table when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
They remind me of a bunch of vultures over a small bird. And that 25 billion is not going to do them birds. They're going to be right back after more after that's over. So I'm dead set against giving them anything. They didn't do nothing but give the unions hell and kill them.
But you know what's going to happen to the workers when they go bankrupt?
Well, they'll probably lose pension, depending on whether they got divine benefit or money purchase or whatever. If they go bankrupt, they only have to use whatever money they got in a divine benefit plan until it runs out. They don't have to replenish that.
No, they don't.
So that's going to leave a lot of people hung out there. But I am so sick of hearing this bailout crap that it ain't funny. And I'm glad Obama is not really backing that. He has not come out of it anyway as of yet, urging anybody to go ahead and he's just letting this thing float freely in the river, so to speak. And I like him for that. But I just want to tell you, you're doing a great job, too, at putting these repigs in their place. So I appreciate that. But Joe Lieberman, you spoke on him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know something? He's still the damn fox in the chicken house. And the people that don't insist that they take further action, even if it's probably not too late now, is foolish to think that he's going to change. He's a little smirk that...
Well, see, and he'll be... There's no way Harry Reid can stop him. He'll be there when he decides that he's going to filibuster Barack Obama's first Supreme Court appointment. He'll do it.
Yeah.
And there will be no consequences.
I wonder that's what I was going to ask. Wonder what they'll do then.
Oh, Harry Reid will talk about, you know, all this. Our friend Joe, you know, he votes with us most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I don't like that mealy mouth, him or Nancy Pelosi either anymore. And I thought they would be doing great guns when they got in there. And as far as I'm concerned, they're almost a total failure. I'm very disappointed. They're typically, we as Democrats are a weak, forgiving bunch. You don't put people in on the cabinet or let them come in a position to where they have. Look at the shutout they put on us. Hell of patching it up. You know, it's still, they're our enemies. They wouldn't be called repigs or Republicans if they weren't. They will always be Republicans. So you don't get in with them. You can speak to them, and if you have to put your hands in crap to shake hands with them, like some of our local politicians do, that's fine. Go ahead and do that. Show how gullible you are. But don't let them in our house. You don't let a guy with a gun in your house if you don't know his name.
Reasonable to me, yeah.
So I'm just so daggone disappointed and disgusted that they're even listening to these vultures come before them crying like that with their hand out. And, you know, when are the people going to holler socialism? When we was in the unions and fighting for stuff, we were the socialists. But now look who's got their hand out crying but they call it bailout.
Sure.
You know, I'd say.
Well, that's because it's for them.
Yeah, but the union, see, when we bailed out, we were anti-capitalist, and I'm not so damn proud of being one now myself. I happen to live in a capitalist society, but to back them and the kind of people that's up there, they can take it and stick it. And I probably seem a little bit radical to you this evening.
No, no, not at all. I was just thinking of something. I get emails from one of our listeners every so often, a fellow by the name of Cossack. And he's got a quote from Bat Masterson. Remember Bat Masterson?
Yes, I do.
He's got a quote in there on his signature to all of his emails, and it always resonated with me. It says, Bat Masterson said, "There are many in this old world of ours who hold that things break about even for all of us. I've observed, for example, that we all get the same amount of ice. The rich get it in the summertime, and the poor get it in the winter."
That's right on target.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, what you've got right now is you've got Wall Street's, it's easy to interchange. You got Detroit CEOs who want their ice in the daggum summer and let working people take it in the winter.
Yeah, and probably out in it without a roof over their head like is happening. What is wrong with the people that they can't get a feel of what's really happening, Bob, and react in some way? I don't know what to do unless you would form a gigantic march, even to let Obama know you don't even think about putting guys like McCain and them in any position other than what they were elected to. I'm very disappointed in this so-called reaching across the aisles, unless you're going to punch them. And they never did reach across the aisle to us. When they had us down, they kicked us every time they come up the aisle.
Yeah.
And I'd say what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Darn straight.
But I just wanted to call in and explode a little bit.
Exploding's good for you.
Yeah, well.
I don't think we're going to have my guess, and I am only guessing. I don't think we're going to have a bailout before Obama's inaugurated. I think there will be a bailout after he's inaugurated.
Well,
and the thing,
if they help him at all, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, if that is the case, it had better come with strings the size of anchor ropes attached.
Yeah, they wouldn't even answer the question, was it what their intent on paying it back? They haven't answered the question of how much it's going to take and what they're going to use it for. And that part about I saw the part where they, you know, wouldn't raise their hands on two questions that was asked. And then to fly those jets down here like that, I heard a comment that's what that was compared to, and I tell you the truth, I done forgot it, but what somebody made a comment on it in the news that was real good, that a guy wearing a John B. Stetson hat and a suit to a soup line.
Yeah, that was what Gary Ackerman said today. He said top hat and tails and standing in the soup line.
Yeah, so I am so disgusted. And, you know, it's almost like having somebody tie your hands up and then smack you.
This is any way you slice it, from Wall Street to Detroit, this is getting spit on big time. I mean, this is, you know, get out the hanky and wipe off half your face.
Yeah. Buddy, I'll tell you what, they'd sink in the middle kittles of Hades before I would even consider them. And
well, that's the thing, Ed. I think maybe they cooked their own goose today. When they were confronted with flying in on the private jets, and then they sat there and said, "Well, no, we ain't got no plans to sell our jets." Shoot, that may have sealed it for them.
Yeah. Well, and another thing, they said they'd work for $1 a year, but wonder what the other perks that they got, wonder if they're going to give them up too. You know, they're the
ones. Oh, no. Yeah, those are non-negotiable. And, you know, if you've got Gomer Pyle working for you for a dollar a year, Ed, you still got Gomer Pyle working for you.
Yeah, and he's got other ways of getting it back.
Sure.
I don't know what all perks they have got, but it would be interesting to know just how many so-called fringe benefits that these guys have got. That would be real interesting to find out. Because they'll either get it back in swimming pools and big cars or another jet or something. They're not going to do without the niceties that they're used to and the high-priced living style that they've got. They're not going to do it. I heard you say one night about the caviar and whatever, you know, honey, get the caviar and something ready.
Yeah.
And that's where you go. But you're just doing.
Well, I'd like to see some real world number crunching, and I don't have any accounting skills or anything like that. But I'd like to see a comparison. For instance, how many pensioners' health care would be covered by the sale price of a $36 million private corporate jet?
Yeah, that would take care of most of the differences in what they're talking about. Yeah, and you know the cost of living raises that they're supposed to have in their pension, some of them. I'm not sure that all of them's got that, Bob, but some of them's got a cost of living clause in their.
Well, yeah, because all the new hires, I mean, you know, the UAW already went to that two-tiered system. The new hires don't have the older vested contract workers have.
Yeah, and that contributes to union busting because you got people arguing about it and fighting each other over those things.
Well, unions are supposed to be classless societies, are they not?
That's right. You got it.
And when you've gone to a two-tiered system, you have immediately created a class within the union, which thereby, by definition, brings in division. You know, the Kroger strike from a few years back, if you remember it, that was the upshot of part of that. They created a tiered system where all union members were equal, but some union members were more equal than others.
And they got it fixed to where new hires come in at a lower rate with different lower benefits and different pension conditions. All of that, and it's right over here at one of the hospitals in Beckley where there's a big difference like that. And that causes friction. I know one new hire there, and she says that that it's causing problems because the union explained to them that they would be equal, and then they just got their contracts 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the contract to see if I can find violations on the labor law yet, but I'm going to sure go over it and see what I can do to come up with something to bust. And that old District 50, or what they call steel workers, it isn't worth spitting on. We kicked them out and took the UAW when when we saw what they really were. So they need to get rid of them and get them a union in there that represents equally, or equality will prevail. Because when you have that split and so forth in the unions like that, then and you get one worker looking at the other and despising them because they got a little more than the other.
Well, that ain't your brother anymore. That ain't your sister.
Yeah, and that's what that creates. That's exactly.
And it's doesn't happen by accident, Ed. Well, I'd let you know. An email just rolled in from our pal Juanita. She says, "Tell Ed here, my sentiments exactly."
Yeah. Well, the truth will prevail, and the proof will come out yet on these guys, and we will be talking about it. Probably after the new session, after the first of the year, we'll be discussing if they don't turn this thing down and kick it back to Detroit. But it just torques my mind out. I can close my eyes and see those guys, how they come in that room today. And it reminds me of the corporate lawyers and stuff that we dealt with. And I don't think I have to say much more. You know how I feel about them.
I know what you're talking about, Ed.
Well, Bob, I'll get off here and let somebody get on there that can contribute.
Oh, you're contributing plenty. You're contributing plenty. Because what we need to remember is that there are people out there, Ed, who did what you have done, who have walked the walk as well as talking the talk, who have learned the system and have stood up and fought for working people instead of just talking about it.
And waited in the snow from the end of October till February to get contracts. So, and then they want you to give it back. And the main thing is putting this stuff, you know, like you said about the guy said it wasn't much better than whether a bird dog or any kind of dog. It don't make any difference. I had one plant manager say that he could hire the average drunk off the street to do the work that some of us were doing. And I don't forget those things. I know where they stand, and I know that they'll not ever let us have any amount of say-so or control. We're not ever going to have it, but we can sure fight back through politics and through whatever we have, whatever might have to be done, whether it be marches or whatever, to get back at them.
Well, do you remember who that GM CEO was? I'm just trying to remember his name now.
No, Scumbucket.
Bird dog.
Bob, talk to you later.
All right, want me to put you back on hold?
Sure.
All right, stand by. Our buddy Ed. Ed knows what being a member of a union is truly all about. And I don't know that some of our union leadership does, frankly. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing? It's Mike in Woodstock.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I kind of freaked out because I went to look for you online and there was a sad and somewhat humorous message up on your website.
Really?
Maybe I was looking in the wrong place. I don't know. It said something to the effect of apparently we're not big enough to bail out.
I don't know. I'm not sure where you were. I haven't seen that, but
is it headonradio.com or is that the wrong spot?
Wow.
It says Head On Radio. Do not adjust your...
Yeah, that's headonradio.com. That's new. I hadn't seen that.
Apparently this website does not qualify for...
Yeah, well, that's my old website anyway, Mike. The network is at headonradionetwork.com.
Ah, okay. I didn't realize that. Okay. You just need a little redirect on that.
We've talked about that. Frank, thanks for bringing that to my attention.
It's been a little while since I...
Yeah, I don't do websites, so, you know.
No problem. I just saw your number, so I called to see if everything was okay.
Yeah, everything's fine. We focus mainly at headonradionetwork.com these days.
All right, I'll bookmark that. But I just wanted to check in with you. It was an exhilarating election, and... it feels good out here in Woodstock. We all breathe a collective sigh of relief.
Yeah, no kidding. And well, you know, I'm trying to be all happy and excited, Mike. But you know, things like I talked about the attorney general designee last night. That kind of gives me a little bit of the creeps. But anything's going to be better than what we've had for the last 8 years, and that's kind of where my head is right now.
Did you hear what Bernie Sanders was talking about on Tom's show last Friday, that for, you know, at the present price of the stock, we could buy General Motors for like $1.something billion and give it to the employees and let them figure it out?
No, I didn't. Doesn't surprise me.
You know the Lunchtime with Bernie show?
Yes.
So yeah, he was on there, and he's such a he's such a great guy, and he was just—I thought it was the most wonderful idea, a nice socialized idea, you know, and to take the company, give it to the people, get rid of the top management, and see if you know, see how they could work it out without the fools that have been running it.
Well, you know, that's at the end of the day, that's the final. That's the gorilla in the room. Detroit can't survive with those minds still running it.
Right.
So, you know, I can we get rid of them under the? You know, I don't think there's anything, and that's what I was saying to Ed. I don't think that. I don't think that what happens between now and the inauguration can be a bailout of Detroit. That's the kind of bailout that Detroit needs. Because, you know, when you're bailing water, bailout means to remove water from an enclosed surface to prevent sinking. And as long as those three CEOs and the people who made this problem are sitting there, then we're not bailing out when, because they need to be the ones that are chucked overboard.
Did I hear they flew in on private jets?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, $36 million jet for the GM guy. And got called. Now, to our credit, they got called on it.
They did?
Oh, yeah. In fact, a congressman from New York, a fellow by the name of Ackerman, Gary Ackerman.
Oh, yeah, I know Gary, yeah.
Sort of gave him the business over it. And I was proud of him for it. He said them showing up on a $36 million, and they didn't fly in on a jet, they flew three jets.
Jerks.
Yeah. And he said it's like seeing a guy show up at the soup kitchen in high hat and tuxedo. And it is.
You know, we're really on the verge here, and we can go a couple different directions. That's the way I'm feeling, and I think that's the way you're feeling, too. Like, we could really, truly have kind of an FDR kind of government, right? Or we could have a rerun of Clinton.
We'll never know, because we can't build the time machine, Mike, but we'll never know what Clinton might have done had Clinton not been saddled with the so-called Republican Revolution, you know, the Contract on America that happened in 1994. The guy had an 8-year presidency and spent 6 of it having to deal with the Republican in Congress.
Yeah.
Now, Obama's coming in with a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, and the $64 million question is, will they work with each other, and will they work on anything resembling a liberal progressive agenda? And, of course, the for-profit media is out there screaming, as Juanita noted, center-right, 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 center-right. And they're doing everything in their power to make sure that nothing liberal does get done.
But I've got a couple of, you know, stray Republican friends out there. Of course, these are Northeastern Republicans. They're a different breed, so I can't judge it off them. But it seems to me that there's like this sense, there's kind of a feeling, even if it's brief, that there's some kind of unity happening right now. Do you get that feeling at all, or is that just like a Northeast kind of?
No, I get there is that feeling, and it's the thing is, it's popular, and I mean that in terms of the people, not as in, you know, Paris Hilton.
Right.
It is a popular feeling. The question is whether it translates to our members of Congress, and that's where I worry that the letdown may come.
Mm-hmm.
There's a desire to be a better America, and a knowledge that we can be a better America, and those references that Obama made during the campaign, especially during his acceptance speech, where he talked about the sacrifices of previous generations, that stands as a call to us, Mike.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, including myself, took him very, very seriously.
Yeah.
But if we see more of same old business as usual, then I don't know if it'll last.
Well, how are you going to define business as usual? Is it the people he surrounds himself with, or is it the policies that he enacts?
For me, it's policy, because
the people can transcend, people appropriately led and motivated can transcend their own personal hang-ups.
Right.
So that, for instance, I've tried to put as shiny a patina on Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff as I possibly can. I mean, you know, this guy's DLC to the core. But he's not a policymaker. He's Obama's kneecap man. So if he's doing, yeah. if he's doing Obama's bidding, maybe it's a different thing. The thing yesterday with this, I can't remember his name now, the attorney general designee, the guy was up to
New York.
He was up to his elbows in the,
Rich scandal.
Well, no, in Mark Rich, nah, it doesn't bother me so much. Presidents do pardons. It's his position as trial counsel and corporate counsel to Chiquita Brands in negotiating the sweetheart deal for them for having 4,000 Colombians killed.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that bothers me a lot, Mike. And yet, he's saying a lot of the right things otherwise. So all I know is that I got to sit here till January 20th, and then we see what happens. And
I've been spending quite a bit of time in Central America. I don't know if I told you.
Yeah, you mentioned.
I opened up a backpackers hostel down there. It's called Bamboo Hostel.
Oh, wow.
It's in a place called David, Panama.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, so I'll be down there most of the winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There are worse places to be.
When I find your website, which is headonradionetwork.com,
correct.
I'll tune you in down there.
Oh, I hope you will, and tell your friends and neighbors. We've got a couple of listeners down in that neck of the woods. We've got some friends who listen in Costa Rica, among other places, and love hearing from them.
Go to bamboohostel.com. That's where we got our site up.
Oh, I very definitely will. That sounds like a really, really neat, I hate that word, undertaking.
It's my hedge, man. I had a little bit of retirement money, and I realized the day before the market crashed that it wasn't going to be worth anything, and I took it out and used it as my down payment for the business down there. And in hindsight, it was a pretty good idea.
Well, I think it probably was. If you find yourself wandering over toward Belize and he's back there, you should poke your head in and say hi to our buddy Joe Bagent, because the perspective that he gets on life in America by watching life in a place like the Hopkins Township, Belize, is profound. Because America looks like a very different place from there, does it not?
It looks like a very different place from everywhere once you get out of there. It looks a little frightening and behemoth-like.
I can imagine that it does. And that, I want a different America. That's one of the things with this incoming administration. Obama did talk about his feelings in regard to the free trade agreement with Colombia, and he said he had misgivings over it because it did not contain labor protections. That's why I'm so bothered by this attorney general designee who lawyered, Chiquita paid $1.7 million, Mike, to have 4,000 Colombians murdered.
Jesus.
And they bought the machine guns for the right-wing paramilitaries to do it with, the death squads.
When did this all go down?
2003 and forward. They were busted by the Bush Justice Department. But between the Bush Justice Department and this attorney general designee, nobody went to jail. It was a $25 million fine that was structured in such a way as to allow Chiquita Brands to pay it over 5 years. We did the math on the air last night. That's $6,675 per dead Colombian.
I've seen those banana plantations in Central America. They're horrendous. They go on for miles and miles and miles, and it looks like modern slavery to me.
Well, and the people are treated as if it is modern slavery. Let's put it that way.
And when people stand up and try to form a labor organization, Chiquita Brands hired a right-wing death squad to go put a bullet behind some guy's ear.
They have a long history of that, or was it the other banana company in Guatemala that was...
Well, Chiquita Brands is what eventually became, I think, is what was originated as United Fruit. You know, we mounted one of the CIA's first operations was mounting a coup in Guatemala on behalf of United Fruit. We went into, I think, Nicaragua on behalf of United Fruit. Yeah, we've got a long history, and of course, Colombia's got a horrible history. It's not just, according to sources down there, it's not just Chiquita Brands, it's Dole, it's Del Monte, and it extends beyond that that level. A man by the name of David Kovalik is a profoundly talented, brilliant human rights lawyer, and he said squarely, and has put forward some of it in court, among other things, Drummond Cole of Birmingham, Alabama, has done the same thing with labor organizers in the coal fields in Colombia. Yes, Colombia has coal fields, so I feel a real sense of kinship
Wow.
with the people there. And if they try to organize or they try to agitate for safer holes to go into so that they don't go in married and their wives come to the hole to meet them widows, they get a bullet behind the ear. And, you know, if Obama's serious about it, how can he possibly nominate this guy to be his attorney general?
That's pretty heavy.
So, you know, I'm not trying to come down on the good feelings. I'm trying to have them too, still. But this is disturbing stuff. And there's already, I guess there's already inklings coming out of Congress that, you know, nobody will do anything to, you know, he'll just sail through the confirmation process, and boom, there you go.
No questions asked, huh?
Yeah, well, who'd want to do that? I'm trying to think here. The only thing that's being put out there is, oh, he's going to be America's first African-American attorney general. Well, that's great. But he's going to be Chiquita Brand's lawyer attorney general.
Well, and, you know, Rice was also a black woman, too.
Yeah. I mean, he's saying some good stuff. These are quotes from him. He says, the notion that the Department of Justice would, in essence, sanction the use of torture as part of the president's plenary power over military operations is as wrong as it is short-sighted. This position flies in the face of the entire history of American law, helping to create a climate in which unnecessarily abusive conduct can somehow be considered legitimate. And yet he did what he did for Chiquita Brands. He also said we must declare without qualification that it is the law, policy, and practice of the United States government that we do not torture people and we do not subject people to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment. He said that. On the other hand, he winked at it when it was done by corporate America. So the American government doesn't torture, but corporate America can? I'm just trying to sort this out.
Yeah, it's worth talking about.
Yeah, his name, by the way, is Eric Holder.
Yeah, Eric Holder. He's from Queens.
Yeah, Eric H. Holder. And he's got one of those. He's got one of those inspiring stories.
He does.
And I don't know. I get, you know, there's. I'm trying to get in touch with that Atticus Finch attitude. You know, where. You defend somebody even no matter how loathsome they are, they're entitled to a zealous constitutional defense. And I guess it's not Eric Holder's fault if the Bush administration Justice Department didn't have any interest in putting those thugs in jail. Mm. That just makes his life a little bit easier. But at the end of the day, there are 4,000 dead Colombians.
I'm glad you're speaking up for them. I'm going to run along, Bob.
Mike, it's good to hear from you. And give us the website again, please.
Bamboo, B-A-M-B-U, like the rolling papers, Bamboo Hostel, HOSTEL.com in David, Panama. We have a pool. We have a swimming pool.
Oh, beautiful. I wish I could say I'll be down your way, but if anything, if a miracle should transpire, by golly, I will.
All right. I'll be listening to you down there starting mid-January.
Great. I look forward to hearing from you one way or another. Email works, too.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now, Mike. Our good friend Mike in Woodstock, New York, lately of David, Panama. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Nothing much. Regarding the holder, yeah, I'm not too pleased by that decision, but I'm trying to hold on to the faith that we need a wolf in the hen house to protect us from the other wolves.
We do. We absolutely do. I mean, like I said, he's saying some of the right things. Guantanamo Bay is an international embarrassment. Some of our closest allies see this prison as a symbol of what America has become. We should close Guantanamo Bay, transfer the remaining prisoners to military prisons in the United States. He said that on June 14th, 2008.
So, you know, I'm trying to hold on to that faith, but, you know, it's like, you know, people forget, and I think this is where, I guess, one of the major conflicts within the African-American community. As you know, I come from a West Indian background.
Yes.
Okay, immigrant West Indian background. And to many immigrants, there's something universally American, whether you're black, white, or brown. In America, you know, we can usually spot them a mile away. You know, all too often we don't see, at least I don't see black or white Americans. I just see Americans.
Yeah.
Mentality-wise. And I think, you know, yes, there's a class of black Americans now where they now feel part of the mainstream and need to do America's imperialistic missions.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, this is a product of that.
I suppose it is.
Yeah. You know, yes, I have issues with this because, you know, that Colombian worker was my grandfather during the Great Depression.
Yes. And that's, you know, the hopes and dreams of literally, because if there's 4,000 dead moms or dads, how many thousands of dead children, of orphans are there?
Yeah.
How many dreams deferred, you know?
Yeah, because my grandfather was a banana planter. He had to leave his farm during the Great Depression when banana prices plummeted. And he was, you know, upper middle class Jamaican, and he did migrant farm labor in Canada. Can you picture a Jamaican going to Canada in the 30s?
That's brave. At least it was. He wasn't a Jamaican farm worker in, you know, Mississippi.
Thank God. Well, you see, that was the thing. Most West Indians did not come here until after civil rights legislation. You know.
Well, that's true.
Most of them came. You know, most of them would go to Canada and England, anywhere but here, until after civil rights. You know, you had to have been real desperate to come here, and most of us tended to stick to the northeastern cities. You know, where we knew about Jim Crow laws, you know. But I'm just saying, you know, that Colombian worker who gets his head blown off, you know, that was my grandfather, and, you know, that's a lot of, you know, that could have been Powell's parents or grandparents.
Yes, it could have.
You know. Yeah, because they are also Jamaican migrants who came here. So, you know, I just, you know, it hurts almost, and it's like also, you know, because I'm kind of demystifying myself with Obama, which is a healthy thing to do with any politician. As proud as I am as an African American that he's become president, now I got to get the halo off of him and see who's he answering to. And who's he answering to? And I'm writing about this, mind you, in my manuscript. He answers to Chicago School of Economics. You know, Friedman, von Hayek, Mises, people who, you know, worked with Pinochet.
Yeah, the nice economists. Yes.
You know, so if there's a click that he's probably who he answered to, and if anything lets you down, just think of those names. If during his presidency, you know, he let us down.
That's true. That's true.
At the end of the day, he comes from the Austria-Chicago School of Economics.
And you don't, I can't just, blink at that.
Yeah.
But again, it's, we've got the little countdown thing going in the chat room. It's 61 days and 15 hours now.
Yeah.
That's 61 days and 15 hours of, I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, that too. So, you know, it's like I tell people, and again, you know, and this is another thing, regardless, you know, what as a people, what have screwed us over and over again, and I mean African-Americans, and I've wrote this down, why the American Civil Rights Movement failed in certain degrees. You always look for this messiah figure. You know, this authoritarian or authoritative, well-intentioned usually, like Martin Luther King, but he was still a very authoritative person.
Sure.
And we don't build a base of people, a pool of people. You know, it's like you have to have that contingency of, God forbid, if something happens, you know, you bury the man and go on with the plan. And I think that's where, you know, I think a lot of progress in Black America is stalled, because we always had this one messiah figure. Every generation we have one.
Well, and, you know, we saw that at the Republican convention, Kevin, and in the little primary pageants that they had, too. I remember the Reagan Library pageant that the Republicans had when they were asked, they were all asked the question, would Ronald Reagan endorse you? And Giuliani stood up and said, sure he would, 9/11. Grandpa from Tennessee, he said, huh? And John McCain said, my friends, I was a foot soldier in the Reagan Revolution. And out of all of that crowd who were sitting there actively trying to literally conjure Reagan up out of the dirt, only radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee said, I'm not as concerned with whether Reagan would endorse me as I am whether I would be able to carry forward the legacy of Ronald Reagan, which in that crowd was the right answer.
Yeah.
So,
oh,
yeah. He's their dearly departed messiah, and if this country was taken over by right-wingers for 200 or 300 years, he would be deified like some Caesar murdered behind a curtain sooner or later.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a given. I just think the significance of Reagan, though, is that he united almost every faction of the conservative movement under one drum beat. And that's why they look at him as a god. But there's several factions to the neocons, and they're not necessarily, well, I shouldn't say neoconservatism is just one faction of the conservative movement. But and they don't necessarily agree with one another. Pat Buchanan is an economic isolationist, and most conservatives aren't. They're free market international supply-siders. You know, that's where, you know, Pat Buchanan and I kind of agree to a certain degree.
You mean in which way?
In terms of, yeah, we need to implement tariffs. Now, not to the extent that Pat would want it, but I think we should implement tariffs on things that should be made close by, like our weapons. We should not be importing or exporting weapons.
No, right. But, of course, that's big business.
Yeah.
Selling death.
Know,
we're actively involved in the death business.
Yeah, too bad very few of those jobs are here now.
Yeah.
Even that had gone off to China.
And but that, you know, some of the last of America's industrial base is dedicated to building stuff that kills people.
In right-to-work states.
Yeah, absolutely, in right-to-starve states.
Yeah. And you know what? Those are only jobs that are really paying anything in right-to-starve states. And that's why people don't question it. Because, you know, in Florida, if I wasn't so principled, I could probably get a job in McDonnell Douglas paying 50, 60 grand a year. Provided I'm willing to go along with the program.
Yes. But that's no way to live.
Yeah.
Look, Kevin, I think we agree. And it's something that I keep arguing. Consumer choices, job choices, these are all moral choices. These are ethical choices.
Oh, yeah.
And there are some people working in America who have to come home every day and put on a new set of skin because they've spent the day doing evil. Look at one of these slugs who does mountaintop removal around here. He thinks he's good marking. And he's just doing it because that's what's here and that's what keeps his family off of the welfare.
Mm-hmm.
He's a toxic moron. But he goes home and he gets a new vehicle every 5 years and he gets to go out to the Wally World and buy himself a cheap Chinese TV and he clothes his children in cheap, maybe toxic Chinese clothing. All his children are 10 points down on the IQ scale because of the mercury embedded in his wife's very being.
Mm-hmm.
And he proudly runs around with a Friends of Coal sticker on his truck. And he goes to the Friends of Coal concert and the Friends of Coal car show. But he spends his working days destroying the place where I live and comes home at night and says, y'all love me, let's watch some TV.
Well, the thing is, with someone like that, we really need to get the evil out of this word welfare in our society. I notice Joe Scarborough in the morning, Cup of Joe, it's like every other word that utters out of his pie hole is welfare, socialism, and the elitists in these.
You know, I had someone who would not listen to the program very much call me one weekend or one evening, I think, and we had a lovely conversation. I can't remember her name right now. But we were talking, she had traveled internationally and said, you know, I wish you guys would quit calling it corporate socialism. Socialism is good. Socialism meets the needs of people before it meets the needs of corporations. If anything, and the reason I mention this is it kind of goes toward what you're describing, Kevin. The fact of the matter is what we're talking about with the whether it's the Wall Street bailout or the Detroit bailout, what we're talking about is welfare for the very, very, very rich.
Rich, exactly.
And in that sense, it is a pejorative because they don't need it.
Yeah.
It's needed for, you know, I've got an email here from our buddy David in South Carolina talking about what the Democrats did, Harry Reid, pointing out Reid managed to waste an entire week before he split the unemployment extension from the auto bailout plan. The result is that it will not pass until tomorrow, and then the states will have to process the claims, and next week is a short week for state employees, especially when all the states are now broke and laying off their workers. I don't understand, says David, why they could not have passed this legislation first. Then again, I don't have the mind of a U.S. senator. They sure did move fast on the Wall Street bailout, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
You know, look, we're in a country that gives. No, people work for it. Even if they're out of work, they're working every day. That provides $3 a day. $3 a day in the form of food stamps at the max. So let's say, you know, you're a single guy and you're down on your luck and you opt for food stamps. You're supposed to eat on $90 a month.
Jeez.
Now, there's something wrong with a country that does that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we allotted $29 a day for our soldiers in Iraq, and this is not a criticism of the soldiery. This is a criticism of the amount. Our soldiers in Iraq got $29 a day, which wasn't, you know, it wasn't paid as a per diem to the soldiers. Hell no. It was given straight to Halliburton.
Oh, yeah. And they still overcharge.
Right. There's
a mass amount of food and water.
There's that beautiful Gary Trudeau Doonesbury panel where one of the soldiers, I think it's Ray, is standing in line in the chow line. And he says, "I'll have a Halliburger with cheese." And the guy goes, "That'll be $29.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm between a rock and a hard place. I really want to start to see some sort of inkling of profound change, that change that we were promised and was talked a lot about. And I'm not trying to be negative.
Neither am I. But
as Matthew Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, noted in his Progressive Point of View earlier today, when is Barack Obama going to actually appoint a liberal to something? It hasn't happened yet.
I think he may be saving that for the Supreme Court, hopefully.
No, I read an article at Salon today that doesn't exactly point toward a bunch of the raging liberals. No, Supreme Court, no. All he's going to do is appoint people who will stand as a bulwark against those four who aren't going to quit. You know, Scalia and Kennedy are 72, and those people will hold on like grim death until they breathe out one last time and don't breathe in again sometime when they're 90 or more. What, you know, Barack Obama's not really going to be able to change anything so much as hopefully maintain the status quo. He'll probably get to replace Stevens, maybe Souter, and Ginsburg. Those are three liberals anyway, so-called liberals. So, no, I don't see that yet. You know, you've got to have either Kennedy or Scalia or Thomas bail out before you begin to recognize any sort of meaningful change on the Supreme Court.
I'm pretty sure they could link some kind of scandal to Thomas, you know.
Hey, the guy was showing porno flicks to a colleague, and it didn't even keep him from getting on the court, so.
You know, but find out I know they had junk on him. Like, he tried to molest a Girl Scout, you know, something.
Remember the Coke can with the pubic hair?
That dude is twisted. You know, and I'm a pretty open-minded guy. Oh, gosh.
I know. So, you know, all we can kind of do is keep track of what the other side is up to, because these 61 days or whatever are 61, quite frankly, the 61 most important days of this administration. Because this is when they're going to do their real evil. Over at thinkprogress.org, Matthew Iglesias from yesterday has a blog post on something called burrowing. And he defines it as a practice by which political appointees are transformed into career civil servants near the end of a presidential transition. And the Bush administration is going to burrow for all they're worth.
Oh, yeah.
Take the political appointees and get them into civil service positions where you can't dislodge them with a shovel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That way their stench is there for a long time to come.
And there's already a bunch of them already in there. All those graduates of the 247th best law school in the country, and people from the Patrick Henry University and Regents and Jerry Falwell, they were hired like it was a fire sale during the Bush administration. It's worse than an old our government, the federal bureaucracy right now is worse than an old house with termites.
That's why I was telling a friend of mine, the first thing this guy better do, put it this way, I am willing to support Holder, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
Holder, right? If he fires every single one of them, you know,
Well, that's coming because every president does that. You get rid of all the U.S. attorneys and put your own people in.
Yeah, but I'm talking from the custodian on up.
Okay. You want the wholesale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to make sure there's no Monica Goodlings hiding under the baseboards.
Exactly. You know, I will support him. I will forgive the United Fruit. I mean, the Chiquita Banana thing, because you know what? If he fires every one of them, because you know what? It's one thing to have sin and atone for your sin. If he fires from the custodian on up these people, that would be atonement enough, because you know what? He would have, I guess, come to that road to Damascus sort of moment. You know?
Yeah. Or recognized how much poison is still extant inside the DOJ.
Yeah. You know, we're all entitled to that.
Yeah. Well, all we can do is cross our fingers for the time being, because I'm sure nothing's going to come out publicly about it. And of course, you know there will be a right-wing, blood-curdling scream. He's fired all the U.S. attorneys. Why can't we have no hearings? But see, it won't be the same thing or under the same criteria as what the Bush administration did it. And the question is whether or not the American people can comprehend that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be happy for that. If he can do that, you know, it's like, again, not that those 4,000 Colombians don't mean anything, but they're already gone. I'm trying to prevent another 4,000 from dying. If he can slip in the legislation for that, then so be it.
Well, cross your fingers, Kevin. Good talking to you, brother.
Okay, you too, bro.
All right, later. Bye. Bye now.
Bye.
From somewhere in the wilds of Brooklyn, our buddy Kevin. I gotta travel more. I gotta get out of this studio and see a little bit more of the world. I just gotta. I love the thought of everybody where everybody is. And I wonder what, you know, I want to see the world through your eyes. You know, maybe that's one of the things we need to figure out a way to do on the network website. Little walking tours of Kevin's world or Ed's world or, the Albert's world. To name Juanita's world, just to and hang up some photographs in the photo gallery. That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it? And this in from our pal Sophie. She says, just a little comment. Ed is wonderful. Always enjoy what he has to say. You have some great regulars. And we do. Lord, we do. And I don't know, the more we grow, you know, my promise to you is the more, I'm coming to the phones, by the way, the more we grow, the longer we'll be here. And I mean that not only in terms of how long the network will last, but how long I'll be on the air. You know, when the phones light up, when I got six phones, you know, we only got six lines here. You know, the real hoity-toities have 12. We got six lines here. When they're all lit up, I don't leave the air until everybody's had their say. And it's a little bit tough on the archiving and podcasting end. But this is about you. This isn't about me. I can shut up, have a piano land on me, whatever. Nothing changes. It's the dialogue, it's the discussion, it's the debate that you start that makes all of this go. I would go absolutely out of my ever-loving skull if I sat here five nights a week and you weren't the ones lighting up the phones, sending the emails, chatting in the chat room. Fascinating conversation about socialism going on in the chat room right now. I love that stuff. So please remember, and I would dare to speak for all the members of the Horn behind the microphone in the chat room, running the website, everything. I would dare to say, This is not a cult of personality. This is the direct opposite. This is the desire to strip all of that garbage away and get down to the real business of talking about solutions to real problems. Ah, you're not there. Doggone it. Sorry about that. It's half past. It's half past 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. We got about 25 minutes or so good conversation left. If you want to ring in, ring in. There's space for you. And just bear in mind that because this is conversation radio, conversations take a little bit of time. This ain't Rush. Magadettos from Busted Knuckle, Rush! Hey, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. This, I don't think, will ever be that. Where to go, he said. Yeah, I know where I want to go. I got a couple of things in mind. In particular, Bill Kristol, has got to be one of the most loathsome individuals on the right wing. Yesterday, the 18th, he took part in a panel discussion hosted by something called the IFC Media Project and got into it with Pete Hamill. Just listen to this.
They don't know the people are getting wounded.
Let them see a coffin.
They saw plenty of coffins.
Once!
Okay, wait. What this is about is a discussion. I didn't do the setup right. This was a discussion of what Americans actually know about the Iraq occupation. And the fact that we don't have a national sense of what this godforsaken nightmare has cost us. So, let's start again.
They don't know that people are getting wounded.
Let them see a coffin.
They saw plenty of coffins.
Once.
No, nonsense.
Once.
Nonsense. In the real America,
but he's talking about blood on the ground, what Goya saw.
That's right. William Kristol says America has seen plenty of coffins. Really? Have they seen the President of the United States attend a single dadgum funeral? No. How about the Vice President? Sorry. It's astonishing. Some of these right-wingers remain unrepentant. Among other things, in the same event, Bill Kristol argued that the release of the Abu Ghraib photos proves that the Bush administration, quote, wasn't impeding the flow of information from Iraq. There's only one problem. The Bush administration didn't release those photos. They were released in what is left of American media. And then the Bush administration did everything in its power to trivialize that hell and that torture. I don't know. Can you still go to Flush Flimball's website and order a Club Gitmo t-shirt? My friends, it was nothing. No, it was no more. It was no worse than a fraternity prank. There has got to be a fraternity prank room in hell, with broom handles and whips and chains, just waiting for Flush Flimball, assuming that's not something he finds enjoyable. Yeah, I know. Just a quick stop by the Environmental Department. A very interesting study is out from Duke University. Isn't it interesting? They can do good work like this, and at the same time, there can be something in the world called Duke Power and Light. Yeah. A study was released yesterday that was sponsored by the Environmental Defense Fund, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, see, labor, and labor unions associated with the AFL-CIO. and it was performed at, it was developed at Duke University. What does that report say? That report says something that you and I already know. This is a story coming from McClatchy newspapers, written by Jonathan B. Cox of the Raleigh News and Observer. He writes, "For all their talk of building a green economy, one flush with jobs that help protect the environment, most politicians have not said exactly where the new jobs would come from, and a study from Duke University tries to fill the gaps." The study, as I noted, was released yesterday, Tuesday, the 18th of November, under the sponsorship of the Environmental Defense Fund, the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, and the labor unions associated with the AFL-CIO, which is inspiring in its own right, because organized labor is the mother of liberalism in this country, and many, 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 many people have damned well forgotten it. And this, when you see the AFL-CIO, the Brotherhood of Boilermakers, the Environmental Defense Fund standing together, why, I almost feel like I need to go and get that tattered robe with the moon and stars on it out and put it on and get my handy-dandy 30-year-old magic 8-ball with the cracked window that always says answer hazy, ask again later, and call myself a prophet. That's P-R-O-P-H-E-T, not O-F-I-T. Lord knows the last thing in the world you could ever accuse us of is profit. But I do. I feel like that because for how many years now have I been arguing that we will make real liberal progress in this country when labor unions understand that environmental issues are their issues and environmental groups understand that gender equity issues are their issues and human rights advocates understand that labor issues are their issues? Because when we do, the force will be unstoppable. And this is a step in that direction. Just as the efforts of our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch and coalriverwind.org are a step in the right direction when they put their focus not just on saving the mountains, but on saving the mountains and putting in infrastructure that will provide good jobs for lots of people for a long time. And in fact, more employment and more dollars than anything mountaintop removal can ever bring about. When that happens, when that begins happening on a grand scale, conservatism will have a stake driven through its heart and it will be buried at midnight under a mountain of garlic and surrounded by mirrors, in a place where it is always broad daylight. Marcy Lowe is a co-author of the report. She said, "Some people have tried to pit the environment against the economy, but it's not an either-or. Researchers evaluated the value chains of five carbon-reducing technologies." That sounds like a mouthful, but the five carbon-reducing technologies include LED lighting and high-performance windows. A value chain encompasses the steps in creating a product and helps illustrate where people are needed in the process. A high-performance window, for instance, has about 10 components, the report said. Each component requires materials and labor to produce. And people have to create glass and frames and foam, and they have to move the windows from factories to stores and from stores to the install point. And there have to be people who know how to properly install the windows. The same thing applies to wind. You have to have someone who can build the wind turbines, and then someone who is qualified, competent, and capable to install them. And then there has to be an army of people to maintain the power grid and the transmission lines. And jobs flow out from that like ripples in a very, very, very large pond. The report cites Durham-based Cree, which makes chips used in LED lighting, as an example of the growth possible in the green industry. Since 2002, Cree's workforce has almost quadrupled to more than 3,000 employees.
damn tree huggers.
Yeah. We can have this. If we want it. Under the co-sponsorship of the Sierra Club, there is a Green Jobs Conference coming up featuring Green Jobs guru Van Jones in February in Washington, D.C. I don't know if we will be there. It would be nice if we could be. I'd love for you to hear from those people. It's very easy to get all caught up in economic downturns and declines and oh, woe is me on Wall Street. But this is America. This has been, at one time, literally a beacon of hope to much of the rest of the world. It can be again, if we want it. And that is a huge if. Bear in mind the Obama administration will have to fight every step of the way when it does the right thing. Obama appeared at a climate conference, I think, in Los Angeles in the last couple of days. And he said attacking global warming will be a top priority of his administration. And your first inclination is just to say, oh, God, at last. But another McClatchy story also points out that public distrust of government could hobble Barack Obama. It's not public distrust of Barack Obama. It is the fact that for 20 years out of the last 28, this country has been in the grips of narrow-minded dead-enders who don't think America can do anything but kill. And who don't think that America can do anything but destroy itself. Ronald Reagan had that stupid Morning in America ad. And talked about his city on the hill, but he never talked about the barrio in the valley that his policies were helping to expand. It's going to take humongous labor to make things better. But we can. Yes, we can. If we want it. And therein is the be-all and end-all of our future. What are you willing to do to make it a reality? If you choose to simply sit, it will not happen. Feet on the street. Demands made of this Congress and this president upcoming. That they aim high. What did my sixth grade teacher like to say so often? It is better to aim high and miss than to aim low and hit. We have a chance to dare to dream again. Because in dreams come the visions that become our realities. We have to dream it. And after the dreaming is over, we wake up and we work to make them come true. I'm so proud of the AFL-CIO and the Boilermakers and the Environmental Defense Fund, I could just bust. Finally realizing that they have a common purpose. Finally. It's about damn time. Labor can lead the way into a future that's not only viable, but sustainable and renewable. Because we always need skilled hands doing skilled work.
We always need the masters to raise up the apprentices. And it's a beautiful thing when you see that kind of thing happen. It can happen. Unions are going to, unions, if they choose to be, can be the very incubators, the places where this green economy goes from dream to reality. Green construction practices. Green energy. Green electricity. And you hope that they will be. And you hope that these alliances will stay. But there are places, make no mistake, this is the downside. There are places where there's no room for negotiation. A little bit of mountaintop removal is not all right. And if you think that that contradicts what I earlier said about labor issues being environmental issues, being gender equity issues, yada, 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 it's not. No human being, no community is negotiable in this. Because we can find the way. We can find a way to value and cherish workers without destroying the communities at the foot of the mountain. We can. We have to want to. We have to want wind. We have to want solar. We have to want... We have to want an entirely new America filled not with fear, but with a bold dedication to march into the future. We have to want that. And we have to realize that there's going to be dross and deadwood. Dead enders. Those dead enders are the 20 years out of 28 that the Republicans have screamed at us that government is the problem. What did Ronald Reagan say? Well, Nancy, the 9 scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Because, you see, they hate our government. They hate the idea of we the people. They hate the idea. Remember how, never, ever forget how Rudy Giuliani stood at the podium at the Republican National Convention a couple of months ago and mocked the idea that working people with their feet on the ground could transform their communities. Go tell, hey Rudy Giuliani, go tell Majora Carter that her work is a joke. And there will be thousands of people whose lives have been changed by her and her dream who will tell you what a fool you are. Never, never forget that moment when they laughed at community organizers. Because you see, Nardelli and Muali and Wagoner flying about in their corporate jets will never change America. Only we can. Only we can do that. And the next time that Grover Norquist says something about drowning the government in the bathtub, somebody needs to stick his head in a bucket so that he can just listen to the echoes while the rest of us ignore him for the hateful fool that he is. Yes, indeed. Experts at the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change warned that half the world's population, which by then will be ungodly billions, could face a shortage of clean drinking water by 2080. News flash to the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, it's already pretty bad. Two billion people won't have sufficient access to clean water by 2050. It'll be 3.2 billion by 2080. Some of that will be from global warming. Some of that will be from things like mountaintop removal. Some of it will be from induced drought. What does clean drinking water mean? What does the want of clean drinking water mean? There are 2.6 billion human beings on this planet who don't even have access to a toilet of any kind. But do they have a TV, Bob? They don't have access to a toilet of any kind. Of those 2.6 billion people, they're ingesting something on the along the lines of 10 grams of fecal material a day. 2.2 million souls stand to die every year from things like diarrhea. Diarrhea. Just diarrhea. Because they don't have a toilet. And they're not going to have access to the water to flush them with if they did. Of the world's illnesses, fecal matter causes 80% of them. Because these human beings, being human beings, they attend to their bodily functions wherever and whenever for want of proper sanitary facilities, and the food and the drinking water are thereby contaminated. Take 1 gram, I know this is kind of gross, but take 1 gram of feces. 1 gram. There are 10 million viruses in it. In that same gram, there are 1 million bacteria. Gram's getting kind of crowded, isn't it? We'll make a little bit more room, because also in that single gram there are 1,000 parasitic cysts. And 100 worm eggs. And here we are, and there are still people in this country who talk about things like liquid coal. It takes anywhere from 3 to 8 gallons of fresh, pure, potable water to create 1 gallon of fuel. Indeed, they are who think that way, fossil fools. Amazing, isn't it? But that's okay. The gang that's stuffing the silverware in their pockets and trying to figure out a way to get the TV through the door on the way out of the White House, what have they done? From today's Washington Post, the Environmental Protection Agency is finalizing new air quality rules that would make it easier to build coal-fired power plants, oil refineries, and other humongous polluters right next to national parks and wilderness areas. They're doing it even though 5 of the EPA's 10 regional administrators formally dissented from the decision, and 4 others criticized the move in writing. Because, you know, a little water pollution among friends, don't worry about it. Forget about it. And forget about that little gram of caca. Because we're Americans, and that won't never happen to us. Not so fast. It already is. So that's prayer meeting for tonight. I'm awfully glad you could come by and join in. Thank you for your calls. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for your participation in the chat room. If you're down... If you're down Panama way, bambuhostel.com, BAMBUHOSTEL.com. Sounds like a great place to go. A lovely place to spend the winter.
thank you to the generous contributor who just increased our monthly goal. And thank you to those who did so earlier today. You'll never know how much we appreciate it. I'll use names if you tell me I can use names. But thank you. It is my pride, my joy, and my honor to have a hand in this that you're creating. And I'm hard-pressed to put it in proper terms. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Maybe the last few minutes give you an idea of just what it is they're fighting to save and how large the task. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, and to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who literally saved liberal talk on the internet with WhiteRoseSociety.org and in many ways gave it the impetus it needed to break out into terrestrial radio. There are literally thousands of human beings who would not know who, not only little old me, but wouldn't know who Mike Malloy is, wouldn't know who Tom Hartman is, wouldn't know who Randy Rhodes is, if it wasn't for the efforts of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
show is on in less than 1 minute.
Flies! Flies, you hear me? Here's my creation! Flies!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You drop down. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I just am thrilled to be here, and I hope, well, I hope we've got just millions of people out there listening today. We're going through a change here in the studio, and I hope you'll bear with us on it. New settings and a little bit different arrangement than we've normally had. So if we have a little goof up here or there today, why, please bear with us on it. And let us know on the chat room, those of you joining us on the chat room. And by the way, if you're listening at some other venue other than Head On Radio Network, be sure and head on over to the chat room. Head On Radio Network chat room. .com. Be glad to have you in there. Come on in and join the group today. A little light today on the crowd. Don't know what's up with that, but anyway, welcome to the show. We've got a lot to talk about today. We hope you'll join us, and you can do that, you know, by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have you join us here on the program today. Of course, it's a free call. And if you've got minutes to burn on your free, on your phone plan, well, you can call us at 866, well, you can call us at 941-876-6896. I'm going to keep the old cough button handy today. I seem to have a little bit of a ticklish throat. Hope it's not something going around. I know all of you probably have been keeping abreast of a whole lot of news. I thought once the election was over with, we might have, kind of a quiet time. Let's face it, it's not a quiet time. Not quiet at all. What with Barack Obama getting all of his appointments made and all of that, we are very, very busy. And we'll talk about some of his appointments today to be sure. We still don't know about Hillary Clinton. Who was it we just heard about just a little while ago? I'm getting forgetful in my old age. I really am. But been watching the bailout a little bit on TV, the hearings on the bailout, and that was interesting. I don't know how many of you keeping up to speed on that, but it's something we all need to keep a close eye on, I believe. Oh, it was Tom Daschle is going to be the